Okay, let's jump into this deep dive. We're looking at a really massive theological shift, moving from the physical ark of the old covenant, the Ush, to this new covenant idea, the believer, as the actual temple of the Holy Spirit.
That's right. And our goal here is really to unpack how this change, this move from, let's say, external restriction to internal access, completely reshapes spiritual practices like worship, prayer, even service.
It's fundamental.
It is. The ark itself, it hinted at this. Acacia wood for humanity, overlaid with gold for divinity. It was like a signpost saying God intended to move his presence into human existence, not just nearby.
Okay.
But the challenge for us, I think, is realizing that this incredible closeness, this near access, it doesn't diminish the awe. It shouldn't, anyway.
Yeah, that's the paradox, isn't it? Intimacy right alongside majesty. That feels like the heart of the New Covenant definition of transcendence.
Exactly. Under the old covenant, transcendence often meant distance. Think of the veil, the threat of death for getting too close. It was holiness kept at bay, almost.
Terrifyingly far, yeah.
But now, transcendence is defined differently. It's defined by intimacy coupled with righteousness. Because of Christ, God's majesty, his holiness, it's still fully present, but it's graciously dwelling in us.
So that's the reverent boldness Hebrews talks about, approaching God.
Right. Hebrews 4:16. We approach without that old consuming fear, but absolutely with deep respect, profound reverence for the divine presence within. His distance is gone, but his majesty remains.
Okay, so how does this massive theological idea actually hit the ground? How does it change something like, say, worship? I know the Greek term latrous is key here.
It is. Historically, latrous referred to that very specific ritual service, the kind only priests performed, like sprinkling blood on the Hilostorium, the mercy seat, and the Holy of Holies. Very restricted.
Right.
But then you get to the New Covenant, like in Romans 12:1, and suddenly believers are the priests. Our own heart becomes the Holy of Holies.
So worship changes from a specific action to
To our entire lives. That logikon-latrian, reasonable service or spiritual worship, it's offering ourselves continuously. So the practical takeaway is huge. Latroi isn't just a Sunday morning thing. It's the ongoing service of daily life.
every ethical choice, how you treat people, your work.
Absolutely. It's all potentially acceptable spiritual worship now.
Hold on, though. If, my Tuesday afternoon meeting or doing the dishes can count as holy service, doesn't that sort of dilute the specialness of, say, Sunday worship? Are we risking making everything sacred and therefore nothing sacred?
That's the tension. You're right. It's a valid question. But think about how this shift impacts prayer, too. Follow the same pattern. Old covenant prayer was often mediated, right?
Yeah, through a priest behind a veil once a year for the high priest into the holiest place.
Exactly. Bottlenecked, you could say. But then comes that incredible moment. Matthew records the temple veil, the catechesis torn in two, top to bottom.
Access granted
Yeah.
permanently.
Yes. So we're no longer praying towards some distant, restricted spot. We're praying from the very presence of God dwelling within us. It's immediate. Uninterrupted.
Because Christ is our high priest and the mercy seat itself.
He is the ultimate Hilasterian. Where there was once terrifyingly limited access for atonement, we now have constant, immediate access through him. There's literally no unclean place preventing prayer anymore.
Okay, so daily life is worship, prayer is immediate. What about something like fasting? I remember the Ark had that pot of manna reminding Israel of their complaints even when God provided.
Right, a reminder of provision and rebellion. But in the new covenant, Christ says he is the bread of life.
John 6:35.
Yeah, so fasting gets a total rethink. It's not about trying to twist God's arm for provision. It becomes more of a personal declaration, saying that Christ's spiritual presence within you is actually more sustaining than physical food. It reinforces reliance on him, the true manna.
So back to my earlier question then. If my heart is the Holy of Holies and Christ is the true manna, why do we still gather together on Sundays?
Good question to circle back to. Sunday gatherings aren't the only holy time anymore, clearly. But you could see them as the corporate confirmation of this continuous individual access.
Ah, okay.
We come together as an assembly of temples, not to perform a ritual to gain access, but to celebrate a reality that's already true for each person there.
Celebrating a completed reality.
Exactly. It's the communal expression of that reverent boldness we talked about. There's internal awe for the spirit within each person, combined with a shared external confidence, because the veil is torn, the atonement is finished.
So, wrapping this up for you listening, the big takeaway seems to be that your spiritual life isn't stuck inside church walls or limited to certain times. It's active wherever you are.
Precisely. And that leaves us with a final thought, maybe a provocative one. Remember, the law was also in the ark. Jeremiah 31 says in the New Covenant, the law will be written on our hearts.
So if that's true, then loving your neighbor, for instance, isn't just an external command you check off a list. It becomes, well, the natural overflow, the spontaneous expression of God's own nature dwelling inside your temple, inside you, bringing his reconciliation and mercy into the world. So the question for you, what does this internal immediate reality of God's presence mean for your very next interaction, especially with someone who might challenge you?